The following is a CNA podcast.
Welcome to the Climate Conversations. When we talk about mitigating climate change or action that's needed to address the emission of carbon dioxide into our atmosphere, focus has usually been on human-engineered solutions. After all, we cause the problems, so we find the solutions. And I've spoken obviously about this in past episodes of this podcast. Whether it's carbon capture and storing carbon dioxide, or technologies to lower emissions through alternative and clean energies. But this week, I'll talk about what a group of scientists call nature-based approaches and solutions, or natural climate solutions. It's NBS or NCS. Their focus is to conserve and fortify natural environments which can act as carbon sinks. I'm Jamie Ho, and with me to talk about this area of study is Ko Lien Pin, who heads the New Centre for Nature-Based Climate Solutions at the National University of Singapore. Lien Pin has worked in the field of sustainability and environmental science over the last 16 years and is a lead author on a new report, The Business Case for Natural Climate Solutions in Southeast Asia. And it's out this week. Lien Pin, thanks so much for being here.
It's wonderful to be here, Jamie. Thanks for inviting me.
No worries. Let me get to the first question, and it's going to be a wide enough question. Just tell us what these nature-based solutions are. What qualifies something as a nature-based or natural climate solution, and what doesn't?
When we talk about nature-based solutions or natural climate solutions, we are usually talking about two main baskets of solutions. The first one being protection, for example, protecting mangrove forests or old-growth rainforests in Singapore or around the region to avoid the emission of carbon dioxide that would happen if we lose these forests or natural ecosystems. So that's protection. The second basket of solutions are what we call restoration solutions or reforestation. We hear a lot about planting trees nowadays in Singapore and also elsewhere. So by planting trees or growing a new forest, we are also contributing to climate mitigation because these new forests would be capturing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and hence removing the carbon dioxide from the atmosphere.
Well, the thing about it is people sort of know that issues like protection and reforestation have been on the cards since forever, even before people seriously spoke about climate change and the dangers in that. So what is the added sort of focus? How has this evolved over years? I mean, you now head a new center as well. What was the thinking behind that to say, hey, actually, we need a better focus, a deeper focus, wider? How would you explain that?
You're absolutely right that it's nothing new to us, especially to us conservation scientists, you know, the value or the benefits of protecting ecosystems or restoring forests. But I think for a wider society, we are just beginning to realize the existential crisis that is climate change and the need to do something about it. Now, first of all, to reduce further emissions of carbon dioxide and also to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. And we've also come to realize that nature-based solutions are an absolutely important and, in fact, indispensable part of the solution because a lot of the carbon emissions that we have been seeing or experiencing over the last few decades or even the last 100 years or so is actually coming from land use change or deforestation, from our agricultural development, from forestry, from urban expansion, and so on. So we need to somehow stop that or mitigate that source of carbon emissions. And the best way to do that is to avoid further loss of natural ecosystems, locking the carbon away in their biomass or below ground, and also growing new forests to help recapture the carbon dioxide that we have released over the last couple of decades back into our vegetation.
One of the topics that came up in past conversations that I've had with guests on this podcast is the overall carbon cycle already exists. It's been there for, obviously, since time immemorial. There's always been a balance, right? The ability of our trees, our soil to absorb carbon dioxide. But it's been two things that's been happening. Human emissions have been increasing exponentially over time. And we've, again, been taking away carbon sinks, whether it's the trees or whatever. So it's two things that we basically have to do. We have to stop and then we have to regrow, repurpose and reprovide the sinks that we've taken away. So when you talk about now our more human intervention, how are we going to put these sources back in? Because we've taken out so much in such huge numbers. And maybe use the example of mangroves that's quite pertinent to our part of the world. What's the human role in reintroducing, growing back these sources?
it is absolutely critical that we hold on to what we have, to protect what we have. That means the existing mangrove, coastal mangrove ecosystems in Singapore and the region, the rainforests more inland, and so on, because there's no point growing new forests if we cannot hold on to what we have, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like a leaky boat, if you will. We have to stop the leak first.
Plug it first,
plug it first before we think about anything else. And also not just that, not just to stop further loss of our forests, but also to create the enabling conditions so that when we grow our new forests back, we can be sure that they will survive. They will be there for the long term. Mm. First of all, protect our forests and mangroves. Second, to prioritize the reforestation of ecosystems that will give us the biggest bang for our buck. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned mangrove. That's a very astute observation because mangroves are different in a way from terrestrial forests because they have extremely high sequestration rate. They're able to capture carbon at much higher, larger amounts per year, for example, and on a per hectare basis than an inland rainforest. Mm. That's why a lot of attention is now focused on how and where we should be reforesting mangroves. So we attack mangroves first, capture the carbon dioxide from the atmosphere as quickly as possible. And then the third thing we need to do is then think about reforesting our inland forests. Mm. Those might take a longer time. There might be more competing land uses to think about when we shift our attention inland, right? Because you know, people need to grow crops for other priorities of society, ensuring our food security and so on. But we still need to think about how we can transition to growing forests inland as well. To summarize, three things, protect existing ecosystems, whether it's coastal or inland. Secondly, regrow our coastal ecosystems, mangroves and other blue carbon systems. And thirdly, move inland and start to regrow our forests inland as well.
I'm going to talk a little bit now about blue carbon. I like that term. Maybe you will explain that a little bit for our audience. Give us a scorecard as to how our part of the world, I mean, Southeast Asia is a very important place as far as mangroves are concerned, big role to play there. Give us a scorecard how we've done as a region in terms of losses in the first place and where we are at in replacing it and what is needed to regrow it, refurbish it, put it back where it's supposed to be. Where are we at now?
By blue carbon, what we usually mean is all the carbon-rich coastal ecosystems. Mangroves is what we hear about most of the time. But there are also others like seagrass habitats, even macroalgae or seaweeds that is now beginning to attract attention from conservationists and ecologists because of the large amount of carbon that they can sequester and lock away, especially underground. Mm. But the thing is, blue carbon is much less understood than inland forests in terms of their biology, ecology, the amount of carbon that they have locked away, their sequestration rates. Mm. Perhaps most interestingly and importantly, how the carbon flows between these coastal ecosystems. For example, a leaf that drops in a mangrove forest today might end up in a seagrass habitat somewhere else tomorrow, or even drift over to a coral reef ecosystem the next day. Mm. So we need to understand this concept of interconnectedness and interdependence between these different coastal ecosystems because they are so interconnected. The oceans and the water is flowing so freely between them. So there's a lot of science gaps and knowledge gaps that we need to fill before we even want to begin to try to understand how they can contribute to climate mitigation. But one thing is for sure, the protection and the restoration of mangrove or other blue carbon ecosystems are no regret solutions. That we will never regret protecting them or restoring them, whatever their climate mitigation potential may be. Because they also deliver so many other co-benefits to society. Mm. Now, importantly, they provide flood protection, they provide water regulation services, they are a source of livelihoods for many coastal communities. They are important for ensuring sustainability of our fisheries. Mm. Right? And so it's definitely worth protecting our coastal ecosystems.
One of the topics that we've spoken about as well on this podcast are the importance of the oceans and how even small changes in temperature, water temperatures, has effects on everything within that ecosystem. I imagine it would have an impact on mangroves as well. Has that been studied a little bit as to, in and of itself, temperature increases in the oceans and in the waters must have an effect on the mangroves?
That's a super interesting point. In fact, this idea of a feedback loop on mangroves, or actually not just mangroves, even terrestrial systems, we still don't fully understand how rising temperatures might affect the carbon sequestration potential of many of these natural ecosystems. For example, there have been some studies that show that beyond a certain temperature threshold, you know, when it gets to a certain high temperature, some of these carbon sinks might become carbon sources.
Yeah.
So instead of sequestering or helping us to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, they start to emit carbon dioxide to the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Oops, exactly. So we really have to be careful about what we do to these systems and be able to have strategies or actions to mitigate against those kinds of unintended consequences.
Mm. Tell me about some of the interesting things that you hope to study as well in terms of the mangroves that exist in Singapore and in our part of the world. I would imagine that some of the research that you plan to do and your center plans to do has implications for other countries and other systems in our neighborhood as well.
As you know, may know, or your audience may know, mm-hmm. this new Center for Nature-Based Climate Solutions in NUS was just established this year in April. So we are not even, I don't know, eight months old. So we are very young. But even then, we have been investing a lot of our energy and efforts into attacking some of the priority research questions already concerning nature-based climate solutions. So for example, one of the first pieces of research we have completed is to map out the climate mitigation potential of both protecting existing forests and restoring degraded lands into new forests, how that contributes to climate mitigation, not just in Singapore or Southeast Asia, but in fact across the whole tropics. And further to that, we are also very keen to provide information to investors and policymakers to help them to prioritize their investments and to prioritize their decisions by showing them where they should be investing to protect or restore to get the biggest bang for their buck and to get the greatest climate mitigation potential, while at the same time also be deriving many of the co-benefits of these natural ecosystems. So that's the first thing that we did, you know, prioritization, mapping and prioritization. And further to that, we are at the moment collaborating with many of our public and private sector partners and stakeholders who are keen to understand how we could ensure the environmental integrity of these systems. So it's one thing to set up these projects to protect or restore. It's another thing to make sure that they have a long-term lifespan. They have, they are not destroyed, or we don't lose them to natural disasters or human activities over the, you know, next 20, 30, 40, or 50 years or beyond. So this idea of ensuring environmental integrity is very important. And the way we are attacking that is to invest in research in science and technology to use technology-based approaches to monitor the progress of these projects. For example, through space-borne remote sensing to keep track of how the forests change over time, now whether we are actually protecting them, whether they stay intact or whether they might have suffered some deforestation over their lifespan. So these are very important also to increase the transparency of these carbon projects so that governments and investors have confidence and trust in these projects and begin to and are willing to invest in them, not just for their protection, but also to create new economic opportunities through carbon and climate finance to these investors.
Yeah, good. Jump on that point, and you mentioned economic opportunities. A new report that you're a co-author of, The Business Case for Natural Climate Solutions. Now, tell me what the business case is. If I'm in the business, whether or not it's energy-based or resource-based, or maybe even not, point to me, how is there a business case for me, and why is it in my interest as a businessman or to take this seriously as part of my responsibilities?
So there are two main opportunities. The first is to do with our need as a business to be able to transition, to be able to meet our net zero targets, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to reduce our emissions or offset our emissions in the coming decades. So every company, and in fact, country is beginning to understand the importance of doing that. These nature-based climate solutions are the surest way and the most proven way of providing us with the carbon credits to help us achieve these offsetting goals. Mm. Energy transition from fossil fuels, away from fossil fuels to renewables is still very important. But while that is happening, a complementary approach is to offset our carbon emissions by buying up these carbon offsets, which also helps to protect them in the long run. So that's one, which is to meet our targets, our climate targets as a business or a country. Secondly, these nature-based climate solutions can also be a new growth area or a new economic opportunity. First of all, because many companies and countries have their targets to meet. Mm-hmm. So there will be a demand for these high-quality nature-based carbon credits or carbon offsets. So companies can also invest in these carbon projects to supply to market the credits that would be in demand in the coming years. So those are the two main opportunities for businesses to consider when it comes to nature-based climate solutions.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about offsets and credits, carbon credits, as you mentioned, there's always been a certain degree of skepticism from people who say, you know, I mean, sometimes this can distract from the real action that needs to be taken, which is simply in reducing our emissions. As a scientist, as we sort of conclude our conversation, do you see a balance where a business, where an economy or a country can say, look, we need to focus X on actually reducing our emissions in various ways, as well as looking into other means of offsetting? Because as we all know, these offsetting measures and mechanisms have been around for a long time. Whether as an individual, you take a plane, you can buy some carbon offsets in getting something planted in Indonesia or wherever the place may be. What would you say to the skeptics who say, you know, let's not get too overly fixated on this. Let's just focus on the emission cuts as quickly as we can. Is there a nice balance that you can sort of provide? Say, no, let's look at both at the same time.
Well, I don't think there's a dichotomy there, because when you think about carbon emissions, right, reducing carbon emissions, we have to remember that a lot of our carbon emissions are coming from deforestation. Mm. So we need to address that leak, if you will, right? It doesn't mean that all our carbon emissions are coming from fossil fuels. No, a lot of them are also coming from land use change. So nature-based solutions attacks that problem, that part of emissions that is coming from land use change or deforestation. So it's not a dichotomy at all. When we invest in nature-based climate solutions, we're investing in plugging that leak. At the same time, we also need to definitely transition away from fossil fuels. I think the best way to think about it or to understand it is to look at the IPCC pathways, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. They have come up with several pathways for us to achieve the Paris climate target over the next couple of decades. In each and every one of these pathways, there is a very strong focus on energy transition, decarbonization. But at the same time, there's also a focus on reducing emissions through nature-based climate solutions in every one of those pathways. So even the Intergovernmental Panel understands or recognizes that we need to do both and not just focus on energy transition. Further to that, in subsequent decades, so say from 2030 onwards to 2050 and so on, other approaches or solutions will begin to kick in, will become more important. Some of the more technology-focused solutions like carbon capture and storage, whether at source or through bioenergy crops, those will kick in and help to also sequester emissions. At the moment, those solutions are not scalable. They are still very much at the piloting stages. It will take some time for them to come into play. In the immediate future, decarbonization and investing in nature-based solutions to avoid further emissions from deforestation are the two important things that we have to do as a society.
Ho Lian Pin, thank you so much for being here with me today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jamie. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Thanks for listening to Climate Conversations. I hope you've been keeping in touch with our coverage of climate change on CNA.Asia, as well as on our app and on iTunes and Spotify. The team behind this podcast are Crispina Robert, Lin Su Ling, and Erin Low. This podcast has been recorded on Sennheiser. I'm Jamie Ho. Till next week.